Hi, Dan.
Hi, Jason.
How's it going?
Not bad. How about yourself?
Not too bad. We just talked because we were just on a podcast together, but we had to record another podcast because I'm not going to be
podcasts.
Around on Friday. So yeah, I know.
Two podcasts in 2 days. I think this is my fourth podcast in 2 days. That sounds about right.
Yeah, I got two more to go. So, you know, whatever.
They add up.
They do. But I'm gone for the weekend. So we're doing this now. What's going on here? I wrote a thing for Macworld about Photoshop on the iPad, which was one of those columns, you know, it was one of those columns where I was beating my head against the desk for like 3 hours, not writing a word. And then in about 40 minutes, the whole thing just came out. Yeah. So that happened, but it was,
sometimes you need to get that thin end of the wedge.
Yeah. Eventually I got there. So, but you know, I'm excited by it. I'm thinking about 2019 now, and what I'm thinking is 2019 is not just going to be the year of iOS apps coming to the Mac. It's also going to be things we think of as Mac apps coming to iOS, and that's good. If you're an iPad Pro user especially, I think that's good.
I want to stake some unpopular ground here. Something I've been thinking about a lot because this has been discussed a bunch in the past few weeks because of rumors coming out, and it's this whole USB-C on the iPad thing. I don't think this is going to be what we think it is, like, or I don't think it's going to be what people are hoping for.
Yeah.
And I'm starting to think, because there was so much smoke around this, and earlier in the year, even if you remember back before the iPhone XS and XS Max were released, there was this whole rumor that the new versions of the iPhone would have charging plugs that used USB-C instead of USB-A. And that clearly did not come to pass. We got the same old lightning plugs we've had since time immemorial. And I just sit there thinking about the iPad a lot. And I understand what people want out of USB-C on the iPad. None of the rumors have pointed to any of the things that people really want, right? Like, they've basically said charging and video output. And so part of me still sits there thinking, like, I just have a hard time believing Apple is going to throw out lightning on the iPad Pro. And I just don't see the whole, I certainly don't get the whole multi-plug thing, especially because Lightning and USB-C plugs look so similar that the amount of confusion that will introduce, I think, would be very high. So part of me wonders if there's something else happening here where, you know, there will be a dongle that you connect, you know, Lightning to USB-C that then outputs video, for example, at 4K. I don't know if such a thing is plausible, but I kind of wonder if that's we're getting a muddled version of that, because you know as well as I do that we get these little drips and drops that come down the rumor chain, and a lot of times it turns out that we've only got part of the story.
Totally. That's
so I'm kind of putting it out there, like, I have a hard time buying that there will be a USB-C port like right on that new iPad Pro. It could happen, but I'm feeling not great about it.
I think it'll happen. But I'm not like supremely confident, but I think that's it's plausible that Apple would do that as part of the story of saying we're taking this more seriously, and it's more versatile than an iPhone. It's more like a laptop that we make. But you're right, it could very easily be a game of telephone where we have completely guessed deal is.
None of that is to take away from, I think, what you're talking about too with the app situation, where I do think you're right that these professional level apps, we're going to see more and more of these things that we traditionally thought of as PC programs making their way onto the iPad, because there are so many things, like, you know, you talked a lot, and I've heard you talk with Mike on Upgrade about this too, especially in the last couple of weeks, about like things like JavaScript being optimized on the iPad, or like certain things get optimized, right? Like, Apple has spent a lot of time tuning these devices to be really good at specific tasks. And I think it's quite impressive a lot of times then when you look at like the scores and the speeds that these things can accomplish, things like outpacing, you know, Macs in many ways. So it would not surprise me at all to see Photoshop being kind of the tip of an iceberg there.
Yeah. Well, maybe we'll find out. I mean, Phil Schiller was at the Adobe Max event. I have a sneaking suspicion that Adobe and Photoshop would be part of any iPad Pro launch to happen, sure, Let's say, at the end of this month. So if that actually happens, I think
Halloween.
I think we'll see a spooky,
spooky Apple event.
Yeah, yeah. I don't think they would. I think if they do it at the end of the month, it'll be on the 30th, right? Because I tend to agree. All parents are going to want to get home and take their kids trick or treating and stuff like that.
It would be funny though if they did one on Halloween.
Yeah, yeah.
Especially what costume would Tim Cook wear?
Yeah. Oh no! Oh no! Tim! You can't dress as Steve Jobs for the keynote.
It's too soon.
No. Don't do that. Besides, Johnny is also dressed as Steve Jobs.
Everyone at Apple wears.
Yeah, but no, I think it's I do the Photoshop thing. I mean, I tried to explain it. This always comes up, and so if you ever want, I think I've done it before, but this is like I'm trying to give the concise answer for like why I even care about Photoshop, and the answer is because I've used Photoshop for 28 years, and I know how to use it, and it's Photoshop. And the fact is, that's part of it is people are trained to use Photoshop, and then they know it, and then the idea that it will be consistent across the different devices is good. That's also in there. And then, yeah, businesses, industries, workflows in various fields are all based on it because, you know, as we all know, as fans of various like little apps, you say, oh, well, I use this app. And people are like, well, huh? Like writing is a good example. It's like you don't use Word. Like Word is the standard. And that doesn't mean that it's the best, but it is the standard. And it's for reasons. It's entrenched. It's available on all these platforms. It's available for businesses. The businesses trust it. Photoshop is like that. Photoshop is the creative and Adobe's apps in general, the Creative Cloud in general. That is the creative design, you know, video, audio, that whole field equivalent of Microsoft Office. Like, yes, there are other apps that do this stuff, but it is the one that people know. You've got to know to get in the business. It's got the tools, whole workflows are built on top of it.
It's the generic noun. I mean, we talk about stuff getting Photoshopped, right?
You know from your existence as an author of novels, like what format in the end, what format does your novel have to be in? Microsoft Word, right?
Good old doc.
Yep. A docx or whatever. Yeah. I mean,
yeah,
it's,
can't get around it.
It has to go there, and you can avoid it for as long as possible, but it ends up there. And why does it end up there? Because everybody in the publishing industry has Word, and you're not going to get everybody in the publishing industry to have Scrivener. Even if Scrivener makes headway, most of the publishing industry is not going to have Scrivener or have heard of it, and there needs to be an interchange format, and the common denominator there is Word. So Photoshop, it's like that. And yes, for me, it's also just like, I know how it works. I've internalized it. I learned Photoshop. I looked it up. I could not believe this, but it is true in terms of timing. I learned on Photoshop 1 or maybe even like 0.8, but I think it was probably version 1. And before there were layers or multiple undos, seriously terrifying when you had that moment where you deselected something that you had an edit, because at that moment it was irrevocable. You could not go back.
It's like you say, it's the lingua franca, right? Like it's the commonly used.
And also, let's not forget, like the iPad is a natural fit for a big swath of Photoshop users because it is a tablet. It has a pen interface. And I use in this story, it's something that I mentioned in a Six Colors story last year, I want to say, which is somebody I follow on Twitter is an artist named Jen Bartel. She's a comic book artist. She does mostly covers, although she has a new comic that just came out that she's the interior art for, called Blackbird. It's kind of cool. People should check it out. Her art is beautiful. And she's a Mac user. She uses Photoshop on her Mac at home and a Wacom tablet to do her art. And when she travels, she uses a Windows 10 Wacom thing. And it's because she has an iPad. She likes the iPad. I was talking to her about it on Twitter when there were these, you know, rumors of Photoshop coming and all of that. And, you know, her point was she's found some apps on the iPad that are okay and that she likes the iPad and Apple Pencil experience. But bottom line, for her paying work, she needs, like, there are all these great custom brushes that this guy made, and Adobe bought them, and they're in Adobe apps only now.
Right.
And those are her tools of the trade, right? So she literally can't do that part of her job on an iPad. But in 2019, she will be able to do that. And there's so many other people like that who, like the iPad, are predisposed to use the iPad and the Apple Pencil, and they can't because of the software. And yeah, you know, you can get around to it to a point, but after a point, it's just, you're just making more trouble for yourself. So it's a big thing to just like bring down that barrier. And I think, I think it's yet another step in sort of the understanding that the iPad is just a different kind of shaped, computing device like all the others, and you can still do your work on it.
Yeah, one of the things I thought interesting about the announcement they made was, as you alluded to briefly, the cloud PSD format, which is essentially this syncing format for PSD where your cloud contains your sort of canonical version of your document. And I think about this a little bit in the sense you were just talking about using the iPad as your machine and, you know, cases where you have to go around that to use tools that you want to use. And I still write predominantly for my book. I still work on my laptop. And you mentioned Scrivener, and Scrivener is what I use to write it, write my novel in. And Scrivener does exist on iOS.
It does.
It does. It's pretty good, too. However, my biggest problem with iOS is the syncing. And it's because it's not the way the cloud PSD thing sounds like it works, or it's not the way that any of Apple's cloud-based stuff works, where, you know, you save a document on Pages, and then you go and open that document on another device, and it's just all there. Like, if it's saved, then it shows up in the new place. Scrivener is still working on that manual sync model where it's like, I got to make sure, not only that, but I have to generally make sure that I've closed all the Scrivener docs on my Mac if I want to use it on my iPad. Yeah. And that is almost never the case because I leave that app open all the time.
Yep.
And so I'll take my iPad out and I'll think, oh, you know what? I can't do that. Like, I have to like screen share back into my computer, or I'll have to pull out my laptop, sync everything, and then like close all the documents. It's like, this feels archaic. And it is the biggest impediment to me for working on my iPad is the fact that I can't just open open up the app and my files are there and up to date. There are constantly syncing issues. It has to do conflict resolution, all this stuff. And a lot of that is tricky because, you know, Scrivener works, it has these like package files. And I think it's because that format is not particularly robust and was certainly not designed for an era with cloud syncing. So that's my biggest frustration. It's the thing that keeps me from working on the iPad for a lot more of the stuff I do, is that it's not a seamless experience.
Yeah, I don't want to beat up on Scrivener, but it's absolutely
still a great app. I love it.
but every time I go out and I want to write on Scrivener, I have this moment where I'm like, oh God, I got to do the Dropbox sync, right? And it's got all of its files because it's a package format, and it's slowly syncing through all the files. And it's, you know, I know it's a hard problem, but it definitely is an issue. And Adobe at least says that they've worked on this, but you know, there are issues with any of this. If you take your iPad and you haven't synced and you go on a plane, you gotta have your files, right? They have to come with you, so you have to make sure that they sync. It is nice to know that they will, you know, just open a file. Like, it's not, they've got something to grease the skids to move across devices, but you can also like literally just put something in files that is a PSD and open it, and it works. And that's like good, right? Because then you can use Dropbox or iCloud or, you know, whatever you want.
Whatever you want, yeah.
So, yeah. Let's see, what else is going on? We're waiting for an event to materialize. Although I did see a story today that pointed out that Apple's late October events have tended to be, invites have gone out like a week to 9 days before. So a little bit tighter timeline. And that would allow the kind of iPhone, again, the iPhone XR launch to kind of get out of the way before.
Yeah, and I guess Tim Cook is speaking at an event in Europe next week. So that's
not
right
going to happen. Yeah. No, I think the real question is it going to happen in October? Is it going to happen on like the 30th? Yeah. Or is it going to slide? Or does it exist? I have had a couple of people say, do we think it's going to really exist? I'm like, well, the rumors say that they got stuff. So probably, but we don't know for sure.
It would be weird for them to hold, if in fact these things are ready, and all the indications, as you said, seem to be that they are, or at least are on schedule, like, it would be weird for them to hold, say, iPads until after the holidays. Like, that just doesn't make a lot of sense from an Apple perspective.
Even if it's the iPad Pro, and I had somebody say, well, you know, they do iPad in the spring. And it's like, well, yeah, but they've also done iPad in the fall. The original iPad Pro launch was in the fall. I remember very clearly buying my iPad Pro in December of, what was that, 15, the one that I still use every day. I will be buying a new one, assuming that there is one. So I guess we'll find out. And if Macs are a part of that story or not, it would be nice. That would be awfully nice, because I would also like to buy a new Mac Mini, please. but I've been saying that for like
four years
now. So
yeah, somebody, I think Mac Rumors pointed out this morning that the current Mac Mini incarnation is 4 years old this week, which is astounding. It also made me realize mine is much older than that, and it's holding up fine. It does just what it needs to do, and it's great. But so like, I still like to see a new one.
That was in the first few months of me being independent, right? And you too. And I originally thought...
God, was that 4 years ago?
That was 4 years ago, Dan. Surprise.
Oh, let me go.
And I had an external... I'd set up my home office with an external display with my iPad or my MacBook Air attached to it. Like, and that was my work and home computer, and I would just bring it back and forth, and I had a setup here at my desk when I was working at IDG, and I just kept using that. And I kept thinking, well, here's what I'm going to do. My big plan was I was going to wait for the new Mac or new Mac Minis to be announced, and I was going to get the whatever it is, the multi-core, the fast one. And of course, that was the update where they removed the multi-core, the like four core or whatever,
right.
And when they were only dual core. And I thought, forget that. And then they announced the iMac 5K, and I was like, oh, that's what I'm going to get. And so that's why that got me on the iMac train. But originally, I was thinking I was just going to get the Mac Mini and attach it to my little monitor that I already had. My Dell external 24-inch monitor. But I guess this is more money going out of my pocket to Apple. They did a dumb Mac Mini, and they did the awesome iMac, and I ended up buying the iMac instead.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I've been a big fan of the Mac Mini, like, basically since its incarnation. There's an old one sitting over here that I think is a Core Solo model, maybe? I don't know.
I've got one of those in a drawer. Yeah, I want to do a video about the history of the Mac Mini at some point if there's a new Mac Mini. I hope it
has a central role for the putty knife.
Oh, God. Oh, my God, yeah.
I used to have Dan Frakes have to, like, walk me through updating these things.
Oh, yeah.
Because
you had to put it down the one side
so many
and
times.
The other side. Oh, I did that, like, 15 times, too.
Yeah, invariably you'd loosen a cable or like something.
Oh, yeah.
You know, I remember, it's funny, the one I have sitting here, at one point our friend Lex Friedman asked me, like, oh, he had a Mac Mini of this era and he wanted a new hard drive for it, and I had a hard drive in this, and he's like, oh, when you stop using that, can you send me that hard drive? And I was like, I don't want to open this computer ever again.
Never again. No, we talked about it, we maybe even talked about it here, but I know that the harrowing experience of disassembling the current model Mac Mini, it is, you are taking a whole bunch of big parts outside of a very small hole. You almost laparoscopically, like, removing it. It is bananas how you have to dismantle that to get to the drive.
Well, and the version I have is the 2011 or 12, which is better than the most recent version, in which I don't think you can even take the RAM out.
Yeah, that's the one that I've got.
Same chassis,
is the one that you've got, where it's so I put an SSD in it.
Right, and I followed your example.
And destroyed the infrared and the sound. It doesn't make sound. It doesn't do infrared anymore. Those are both gone. And it has this habit of every few weeks, suddenly it will just die and show a question mark, like it's trying to boot. And all you do is turn it off and turn it back on, and then it boots fine.
Oh, yeah. I have that for... Is it the question mark, or does it give you... Mine occasionally starts up with the circle with the slash through it.
Oh, yeah. Sometimes I get that, too.
And same thing. You turn it off, you leave it for a while, turn it back on later, and it seems to fix itself.
I can turn it off and immediately reboot it, and it works fine.
Sometimes mine does, and sometimes it doesn't, but it's pretty close. Like, it's almost always a reboot. Sometimes, you know what I think mine is? That sometimes, because of the shelf it's on, I think it has a little too much heat sometimes, so sometimes it doesn't like that immediately. It likes to cool down.
I have a theory that there's a fault of some sort in the connector that is probably attached to one of the two hard drives that are in there, the spinning drive or the SSD, and it's doing it. But the thing people listening out there will say, Jason, what about your Hackintosh Mini that you had with the Intel NUC? And the answer is there. I tried to do a software update on it, and which is every time you do that, it's a challenge. I don't think it was even to Mojave, although maybe it was. And I followed all the instructions that I followed on all the other software updates, and it didn't work. And the reason it was like I couldn't get it to boot. And the reason that I was doing the software updates is that I was trying to beat away a problem that I had last summer, like summer before last, and went away and then returned, which is every so often the NUC server running OS X would crash, and in doing so, take down my entire network until I unplugged the Ethernet cable or turned it off. So every now and then, all the internet in the house would stop working, and it was because that server, something had happened on that server, and its presence as a broken computer on the network stopped the whole other network from functioning. It was really bad. And it happened, and it went away for a long time, and then it came back. And I thought, I don't really know what's going on here, but I'm going to try to do an update and see if maybe that'll make the ghosts and goblins inside it go away. And it didn't. And I said, you know what? I'm going back to the Mac Mini until Apple makes a new one. And so I just restored from a backup, and now I'm back on my old Mac Mini, and the Intel NUC is in a drawer, and maybe I'll repurpose it as a Windows-based device in the future. But it's not going to be. It's not going to be. Yeah, it knows what it did. It totally knows. So yeah, that's the story. So I'm in. I hope we get all that stuff. I'm ready to give money to Apple for this stuff. I've been ready for a while. I've been ready for 3 years or so.
I'm still intrigued for the rumor that we have heard in various forms since the beginning of this year almost about whether or not there's another laptop coming, right? We heard about the MacBook Air possibly coming back. We heard about a low-cost version, maybe a MacBook update. One of these things has to be true somewhere, right? Like, there has to be a non-MacBook Pro laptop story happening. Or maybe there isn't, I don't know. But, like, there was so much about it earlier in the year, and it seems to have tapered off. But there are still expectations that there might be another model to appear there. But I have no idea what that is. I'm not sure anybody does. But, I look at my MacBook Air, which is a 2014, because that's the computer I bought, right after we left IDG. Mm-hmm. And it's a fine computer. I have noticed the performance under Mojave is disappointing on that computer. And that's an i7, so it's not a slouch. But it chugs a little bit under Mojave. And just, a non-Retina display is starting to look pretty cruddy every time you switch to it. So one of these days I will have to update it. I do love the 11-inch form factor so much, and I doubt that anything Apple releases will head in that direction. But I'm curious to see what their non-MacBook Pro laptop story is.
Yeah, it could be anything, right? I'm going to share with you my conspiracy theory, which is I totally believe is not true. But I had a moment where I was like, whoa, that would be a great conspiracy theory that you should not believe because it's not going to happen. But still, it was a funny moment, which is, Dan, what if the iPad Pro rumors and the sub 1000 laptop rumors are the same? What if Apple's making an iPad Pro with a keyboard, snap-on keyboard case that makes it like a laptop? And this is the part where I can't even say it out loud. And it runs, I guess it also runs Mac OS on ARM. I don't know.
Jason, is there someone I should call?
I had a moment where I loved the feeling of wait a second. We've been looking at this whole thing all wrong. It's one. Are you getting it yet? It's one product. It's totally not one product.
Do you have a board with red yarn on it?
Yeah, it starts with I don't know what other product. It's got to be three products in one. So, right.
Well,
it's
a laptop.
It's an iPad Pro. Yeah, it's a laptop.
It's a toaster and it's a fridge.
Yeah. Are you getting it yet? I put your MacBook in the refrigerator. That is you better take it out. Condensation's gonna get in there. It's not gonna be good.
It's not good. It's not good. I don't know. I mean, I get the kernel of what you're getting at there is an interesting story, right? The idea that like laptops and the iPad have gotten closer and closer and closer together. I don't think Apple, and I don't think you believe either, Apple is about to get the peanut butter and the chocolate quite that far. But there will come a time where your iPad, your 12.9-inch iPad and your 12-inch MacBook, what is the functional difference between these things? Like, is it just a form factor thing? Is that in a platform? Like, is that it? Or just will these things keep getting closer and closer? And eventually they'll just be like, why do we need these? Why do we need both of these?
Given what Apple has stated, my guess is that the answer is going to be the iPad is is what we call the device from Apple that is a tablet shape. And it runs Photoshop and it runs, everything else. And it's great. And Apple's unified app platform that they're doing for next year. And if it's shaped like a laptop, then it runs macOS and it does some different stuff, but it basically runs the same apps. I think that's where we're headed. I think it is literally like it all runs the same apps, but the iPad is an iPad and the MacBook is a MacBook. My only frustration there is what happens, you know, is there ever a convertible? Is there ever something that is an iPad that feels a little more like a laptop if you want it to? Is there ever a MacBook that feels a little bit more like...
Has a touch interface?
Yeah, right, which they could do.
And that's cursor,
that's where it's all up in the air is where does all that come down?
Well,
and it's, you know, Apple's judgment to make at that point, because that's just a choice that has to be made,
right? And there's no, I don't think they feel much urgency currently behind that, because they are right that they like that market that mixes those things has not really like exploded, right? Like it's not like a market where they feel like they need to be in the touchscreen laptop / convertible market, because there are products that do that, and I think they do okay, but they're not like, it's not like, oh, if you don't have a smartphone, you're basically like, you missed a boat, right? And so I'm curious, they can afford to play it out for a little while because they can cover both sides of that argument, and I don't think they're losing much by not having something in the middle, but that may change. There may come a point where, you know, people don't want to choose and they want the best of both worlds and they go someplace else. And at that point, Apple might start have to think more seriously about like, well, how do we address that market? But right now, I don't think that's a big enough segment that they really are like, we need to develop something that fits in that niche.
Yeah. Yep. Yep. Yep.
So, yeah, I don't know. Don't know. Anything else happening? It seems quiet.
Yeah, they changed the bagel emoji.
Oh yeah,
that's good. That.
I like all the people who suggested it should have the pop up, and you can choose the different type of bagel.
Type of bagel, yeah, that's right. Bagel yellow for egg bagel.
That's hilarious and delightful. I would love that.
Yeah, that would be pretty good. Of course, all the Canadians now, or at least all the Montrealers, are complaining because it's not a Montreal bagel, it's a New York style bagel. And then of course that led to maybe my favorite thing that happened this week is Federico Vitici going off about the pizza emoji is, I mean, and he's absolutely right. It is a New York slice. That's what it is. It's a New York pepperoni slice. And he said, why is it just a slice? And why does it not have basil? And why does it have this pepperoni in quotes, which that killed me too, in quotes, around it? And like, he's got a point. At some point, you have to pick a generic representation of that. Although I do wonder sometimes, like, you could localize emojis, but then if I send you a pizza slice and it looks American to me, but it comes in, you know, in Italy, it comes up as a different kind of pizza.
We're back to the old gun versus water pistol problem.
Yeah, exactly. It's emoji fragmentation and nobody wants that. But what I'm saying is I think the discussion about bagel emoji is funny and interesting. I did a whole podcast with Jeremy Burge from Emojipedia on it. It's the Emoji Rap podcast. People can go listen to that if they want to. You can just search for Emoji Rap. You'll find it. I think I'm in the most recent episode talking about all of this. And in that episode, I said, you know, Apple has been known based on feedback to alter an emoji design or two during the beta process, and that's absolutely what happened. I thought it might, because that was the one that everybody was talking about. I thought that might happen, and it did. And as a result of all of this talk about bagels, New York bagels and Montreal bagels and lousy bagels and good bagels, you know what I did today, Dan?
Do you have a bagel?
I made bagels today.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, I told you we had to start a little later because I was baking
something.
Oh, you
were baking. I didn't know what you were baking.
I made bagels. I made Montreal style bagels.
Wow! Whoa!
Yeah.
Now do you? All right. Now we're shift gears slightly here because I've dabbled a little bit in baking, but I'm by no means any expert. Do you like? So you have to boil them.
Yep.
That's part of it.
So I used a recipe. I should probably at least tell people where they can find it. Go to mysecondbreakfast.com. Or search My Second Breakfast Montreal Bagels recipe and you'll get it. MySecondBreakfast.com is where I got it. And this was I actually found it through another source. There was some blog that was like telling you how to make a bagel. And then it said, you can read the complete instructions at MySecondBreakfast.com. And like, why am I reading your reblogging of a recipe when there's this beautiful, beautiful recipe? So yeah, you know, you knead it and let it rise because it's a dough thing. And then you put them in boiling water for this recipe. It's for 90 seconds, 45 seconds on each side.
Oh, okay.
And then you do an egg wash and put some like seeds. I had some, I, It turns out my family doesn't love sesame seeds, and so we have collected like 4 or 5 packets of sesame seeds from various Blue Aprons over the months. So I emptied all of those. I did the little, you know, dip it in egg, dip it in the seeds, put it on the thing, and then you bake it for 10 minutes on one side, 6 minutes on the other side. And that's it. Now I've got 12. Well, I've got 11 because I ate one. 11 Montreal bagels in my kitchen. So I'm going to freeze some of them, I think, when they are cool. My family will hopefully eat the rest. But wow. It was kind of fun. I've never made bagels before. I've always thought about it. The New York bagels method intimidates me because I think you got to put
is it the lye?
You got to put lye in the water.
That gets dicey.
So I don't want to do that. And you can put honey. That's what this recipe is you put honey in the water that you boil, that you dip them in instead. And that makes a Montreal bagel.
I'm fascinated, and I'm going to leave this here because I kind of want to try this now.
I like Montreal bagels a lot. They're good. They're not the same.
Oh, yeah, so do I. They're very different, but I like them.
But they're good. They're nice.
When we used to do Singleton, I always... Daniel Jalkett would always ride with me, and we'd always make our run on the way back, on the drive back.
Load up on the bagel store bagels.
Get a couple dozen, and they're so good there, especially when you get them like fresh right off the oven. It's kind of nuts.
And I'm like, every now and then I get this notion to bake something or cook something, and I think I'm gonna have to go get all these ingredients. I had every ingredient for this. This is like there's nothing.
Yeah, these
to
are
it.
pretty simple for the
yeah.
most part.
Yeah. Do you have yeast and flour and sugar
and water? And pretty much. Yeah, the other week I made biscuits. That was on a whim, which was, it's pretty simple, but like, you know, that's kind of, and I have a whole bread cookbook here. I've been meaning to get into baking a little bit more, but I've been lazy about it.
Yeah, it happens.
But I do, I read a little bit for a while, but who was really into making bagels was our former colleague, Brian Chen. Who wrote a bunch of articles about it, I believe, in the New York Times.
Sure.
Where he works now, about making his quest to make a perfect bagel.
Bagel, yeah.
Yeah, I love bagels. When I was a kid, I would go, you know, you go to the pediatrician, and my pediatrician every year would ask, what's your favorite food, you know, and like, just to sort of gauge what you're eating. And like, I think 9 times out of 10, I went, it was bagels.
Mm-hmm.
And so since I was a very small kid, you know, I can throw a little bit of that on my father, who's Jewish, who like really instilled me with a love of bagels from a very young age, and my grandmother too. But yeah, I have never tried my hand at making them, and now I'm intrigued.
Yeah, it was super easy. Honestly, right, and I ended up with 12 bagels. The recipe says you can freeze them.
Sure.
And you can also just put in chocolate chips and make chocolate chip bagels if you want to. That's a perfectly valid thing to do. And I did have one. I did. I apparently left out the maple syrup, so now I'm going to be banned from Canada. But I'll promise to put it in next time.
Interesting. I didn't even know. Is there maple syrup traditionally in the bagels?
I have no idea. It's Canada, so anything's possible.
Sure, that seems plausible.
Yeah. Anyway, a little bagel segment here. On the Secret Podcast.
I do love bagels. People. There's a very good bagel place near where we live that makes excellent bagels.
I have been to that place.
Oh, have you? The Bagelsaurus?
Yeah, I think so. You took me to a bagel place. And it's like a hole in the wall, and there are people waiting in line, and we went in.
Yeah, it's very good. Yeah, Bagelsaurus. It's a very good bagel place.
It felt very much like the kind of place that that everybody knows the bagels there are great. And
Our friend Brian Hamilton, who no longer lives super close to me, but lives in my city, mm-hmm. will vouch for that. And he is obviously a breakfast connoisseur.
He is.
So, Search you know, I trust his opinion.
The Most Important Meal Podcast, if you'd like to hear more. I'm on an episode of that today. Talking about tea.
I've never been on an episode of Most Important Meal. Brian Hamilton will be listening to this, and he will know that, like, even though he lived right around the corner from me for a while, like, yeah, where's my...
Now, are you saying that you should be on?
Or I love
just stating the fact that you haven't been on.
I'm throwing that out there.
Okay, the implication is that you want to be on Brian's podcast, Brian and Truge's podcast
nice,
about
nice
breakfast.
It's nice to be asked. It's nice to be asked.
And then you'll turn him down, right?
That's right.
So can you not be on and just Truge be on with you?
Yeah,
and,
that's right. That's right. That's the kind of jerk I am.
I can't share a podcast with Brian Hamilton anymore, that guy. Hi, Brian. Anyway, I think we're done for now. I'm going to go to Chicago for the weekend. We got our live upgrade on Monday.
That's very exciting.
It may be a draft. It may not be. I don't know. Like, if they don't announce that they're doing an event, then we can't really do a draft of it. And if so, if they don't send out invitations by Monday, like, which how seems, do we do a draft?
That seems, yeah, I don't know. They're still probably not going to announce it between now and the end of the week. So maybe on Monday, but even that would be, yeah, I don't know. That's, you're in a bit of a bind. I hope you have backup.
Yeah. Well, I think we're going to have to talk about what the backup plan is, but, we'll do something, but it is an interesting question. I love it. We'll get all ready to go, and then I'll get an email and be like, oh, there it is.
Throw it all out. We're doing it live.
Burn it down. All right. Well, thanks to everybody out there for supporting us and listening to The Secret Podcast, as always. And we'll be back in a week-ish as the schedule, as the calendar gods demand. But until then, bye, Dan.
Bye, Jason.